We have been doing a sermon series called Guardrails, and you see the big guardrail that we have up there, which I just marvel at every time I see it because it's a real piece of metal up there, in case you didn't know. It weighs about 90 pounds, and so far it hasn't fallen and hit anybody yet, so we're really glad about that. Thanks to Jeff and Courtney for putting that up for us. We appreciate it. But we're talking about guardrails as our theme. We're in our fourth sermon on this. And, of course, a guardrail is a system designed to keep vehicles from straying into dangerous or forbidden areas. When we're talking about guardrails, though, we're sort of using that physical car vehicle symbol as a metaphor for our lives. We're really talking about personally developing systems in our lives and rules in our lives that will keep us from straying. So what we're trying to do is have us develop standards of behavior that become for us matters of conscience. And if we break those standards, hopefully our conscience will light up and we'll know we're going into or veering into dangerous territory. Maybe a simpler way to look at it is to simply say guardrails direct and protect. Now, when we create these rules, they are not meant to be laws for us that we rigidly follow. They're really guidelines to help us know when we're straying or going off the path. And they're guidelines to help us stay on the path that God would have us be on, to direct and protect. Today we're going to be talking about family guardrails. That is, how we develop rules for our family, and that means for us and our spouse, for our family and how we live, how we relate to one another. And I would say this is a really important topic. It's important for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is that if we don't set up guardrails for ourselves and for our families, what will we be using for the rules that we live by? Well, we'll be having as a default setting the rules of the world. You've seen this symbol on your computer? That's if you mess it all up, you go back to the original default. It just goes back there. That may work great on your computer. I'm all the time going back to my default settings on the computer, but I don't want to go back to the culture's default settings because the culture largely doesn't have any, and that would create problems for us. For a lot of people, too, it's important to develop your own because maybe you grew up in a home where you didn't have the best guardrails or best rules. Maybe you grew up in a home where there was a lot of dysfunction or problems. So we're really beginning a conversation today to have you think about what rules you want for your family and how to live and how to grow in the Christian faith and life. Not to have the default settings of the world, but to have different and better ones. We're going to be looking, as we have several times already, at the book of Proverbs. Now, how many, I'm hoping a lot of you have read the book of Proverbs. I won't even ask, but hopefully you've read the book of Proverbs. And if you have, one of the things you notice there is it's all over the place. It has all these maxims and these rules and these ideas and these proverbs that are meant to help you live a wise life. And what the Bible means by a wise life is one that has lived well, that has lived in accordance with God's will, that has lived in connection with others in the right way. So we're to look at this book and get rules for living, family guardrails, and other guardrails too. But one of the reasons it's all over the place is because, of course, we all need different guidelines, right? We are different people trying to live a faithful life, and so you might need one piece of advice and I might need another, and at different times in our lives, we'll need different pieces of advice. So it's important for us to think about who we are, where we are in our walk, and how God wants to shape us. But we're going to look now at a few verses in the book of Proverbs that sort of tell us some things about how to live. It begins with this verse, verse 9, "Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart." Now, I personally am not a big fan of perfume or incense, but imagine you lived in the ancient world when baths were infrequent and people often stank, and you never got to smell nice things. Perfume would be probably a lot nicer, right? And incense was burned as a sort of a symbol of really great wealth and as a joy and in worship. So perfume and incense bring joy to the heart. And then it says this, "And the pleasantness of a friend springs from their heartful advice." So you really need friends who will give you advice, who will tell you what to do and how to live. Okay? That's what this verse says. Find people who can give you good advice. And then it goes on. "Do not forsake your friend or friend of your family." Now, what that means really is, let's put it in our terms, that would mean you've got friends, you've got relatives of friends, you want to be a good support network for them, right? So if you have a friend who asks you a favor, try to help them. Try to be a support for them. And then it goes on to say, this is why. And do not go to your relative's house when disaster strikes you. Everybody's been asking me about that. Why wouldn't I go to my relative's house if disaster strikes me? It's not saying you don't do that. It's saying that you don't always do that. Whenever you have a problem, don't go to your brother or your mother all the time with a problem. Expand your support network. And that's what it says here. Better a neighbor nearby than a relative far away. You've got other people here who can support and help you. And develop those tools and those people who can give you help and support. Now, all this sounds pretty like duh advice, right? But a lot of Proverbs, a lot of moral advice, a lot of wisdom along the way is just this kind of talk. Simple, basic rules for living. Then it says this, and these are the key verses, the last two for us today. Be wise, my son. The book of Proverbs is written almost like it's a book of advice to somebody's kid. So listen up, pay attention. This is like every conversation I have with my children today. They come home from college and I'm saying, be wise, do this, do that. Be wise, my son, and bring joy to my heart, right? I want to be happy. And the way that's really going to make me happy is if you live a good life, if you're wise, if you're really living out the principles of life, then I can answer anyone who treats me with contempt. So if anybody looks down at me, but you're living a good life, that's all that matters to me. Don't care what they say as long as you're doing what's right and living the kind of life I've hoped for. And then this last verse, the prudent see danger and take refuge. So wise people are looking ahead to see what dangers are coming. And when they see bad things happening, they know to take refuge in the right way. But the simple keep going and pay the penalty. And we've all seen this happen in life, right? People who just charge ahead even though it seems obvious that bad things are going to happen, right? They just keep blundering forward and going ahead even though disaster is there. I always think of, you know, remember the tsunami that hit a number of years ago? And all the water rushed out, and in many places, all the people rushed out because they were going, wow, it's so weird, the ocean has disappeared, and they ran out onto the beach in some places. And there were other places where people said, oh my gosh, the ocean has disappeared, let's get out of Dodge. You know, it's time to run away because the ocean has disappeared. We want to listen to advice, we want to be prudent, we want to see the dangers that lie ahead so that we can go in the right way. That's what the scripture passage is telling us. Wow, so I was listening to this, I was listening to sermons and ideas about this, and then thinking about family guardrails. And when I tried to create ideas about family guardrails, I was feeling like the book of Proverbs, which is all over the place. There's a bit of advice here and another bit of advice there. And I tried to organize this, and then I was thinking, boy, a lot of this is my advice, things that I think are important. And I couldn't separate everything that I thought from everything that was kind of a general rule. So here's what I've decided to do today. Give you some starting points to think about some things as we go creating family guardrails for you and your family. And maybe some of these will be, duh, of course I know that. Or maybe it'll be like, oh, hadn't thought of that. Hopefully it'll be some of the I hadn't thought of that. But here we go. When we're thinking of guardrails, one of the things we have to start with is becoming a healthier and better you. Yes, I'm talking about families, but you still need to have a healthy you in your family. Why? Because a healthy you equals, in many ways, a healthy family. If we have dysfunctional parents, if we have dysfunctional people in a marriage, things don't go well. Get yourself healthy. Get yourself moving in the right direction. And by healthy, I mean in body, mind, spirit, and socially. So, one of the issues that goes on for a lot of people today is, how are we taking care of ourselves physically? Are we getting the exercise and sleep and eating the foods that are going to help us? What about our minds? Are we spending all our time on video games and the phone and television and entertainment, or are we actually focusing on some things that are helping us grow? Spiritually, are we involved in worship? Okay, those kinds of things. Are we involved in prayer? Are we reading the Bible? Are we with people that are helping us to grow? All those things are key for us. And they lead to the next thing I wanted to mention. These are sort of the big topics before we get into individual things that will probably be a little more interesting, is priorities. I don't know if you can read this. It says, as parents, we guide by our unspoken example. It is only when we're talking to them that our kids aren't listening. I like that last part. It's only when we're talking to them that our kids aren't listening. We model things, right? And how we model healthy living really impacts our children. How we model the priorities that we want to have in life really impacts our children. Okay? So we have to really live these things out if they're going to have meaning. Priorities. What would you say would be the top three? I'm open. What would you say top three priorities? Anybody? Yes, sir. Health is what you're saying. Anybody else? Yes. Love? What? Being an example. Okay, I'm going to give you the example that I found, that I had. Priorities in the Christian life. God, spouse, children, occupation, ministry. But notice what it says there on the thing, the key verse. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. So usually we'd say God first, family second, job third. And I've looked up all these lists. I went online, was looking at all these different lists, and it was interesting seeing how they played with these lists. This is one, God, family, work, just like I just said. This is one, priorities. Keep God first, watch everything else fall into place. Okay, some truth to that. And then this one, rethink your priorities. It went from God, spouse, family, work, and everything else to God and everything. That's kind of helpful and a good way of looking at it too. God's in everything, and it'll change the way I look at things. And then I like this one, this guy just trying to choose. I've had people tell me too, hey, when you say talk about priorities, God, family, work, that's just not helpful because that's not what happens in life. Our life gets full of all these busy things. You know, years ago, we were working on the building project here for this church. There was one point where I had probably the only time I really messed up something badly, and it was really bad. I didn't get the financing set up in the way that I should have. So we were reaching a crunch point where we needed to get a loan in, and I hadn't arranged it in the right way. And I realized that the first time we did a building, our secretary at that time, Carol DeGroote, had done all the work, and I just thought it was easy because she had done it all. So I reached this crisis point, and there was $1.5 million loan at stake, right? And wow, I was feeling knots in my stomach, and I was at home cooking, and I'd been waiting all day for this phone call to come, and it hadn't come. And at the same time, there was somebody in the church that was really sick, and there I am. I'm making dinner. I'm waiting for this phone call for $1.5 million loan, and I'm also waiting for somebody who's really sick and dying to talk to me about their problems. And guess what? I'm making dinner, and I get the call for $1.5 million loan, and I have to say, hold on a second. I have to turn off the rice. And you're thinking, how dumb is that? There's $1.5 million at stake, and I'm focusing on the rice because it's exigent. You know, there's things that happen. You know, there's screaming babies, or there's diapers to be changed, or there's whatever needs to happen at that moment that sometimes takes priority. And the same thing happened just 5 minutes later. The other person called, and I was, again, right in the middle of something that I had to take care of first. I had to take it out. It was going to burn in the oven. You know what I mean? And the beeper was going off. What I'm saying, though, is if you really want to know what your priorities are, you don't take it from moment to moment. We realize that there are things that take priority just because of life for a moment. But if I can look at a week or a month or a year, I can see what my priorities really are by what I'm really doing. And if they're not what they should be, I need to look at that and evaluate it and make the priorities into what they should be. Well, moving on. Spirituality would be something that's key for us to set as a family guideline. We'll talk about this in different ways because a lot of families today don't really consciously do this. They sort of figure spirituality will just kind of happen. Or I hear a lot of people even say, we'll let our kids decide. Why? I don't let my kids make any important decisions on their own until they're out of the house when I don't have any choice, right? Why would I let them make decisions about their faith, which is critical about who I am and what we want to be? So what would be critical decisions? You know, attending church regularly, worship, being involved in small groups and Sunday school, finding areas of mission and service, finding areas where times where we can pray together as a family and make that a part of our lives, finding ways of making the scriptures come alive for us. Those are things that are essential for a family. Marriage. We talked about this last week, about how to have healthy marriages and healthy relationships. But when we're talking about family guardrails, I think one thing we all kind of should know, if we don't know, is that really family begins with couples getting married. That's the beginning of family. Children are a nice addition if they come, but they're really an addition. And I mentioned, when I was a kid, I had eight brothers and sisters, so 9 of us kids, and I had my parents. And you'd think with 9 kids, you would be children-focused. Not so in my family. My parents always made it clear they were in charge and they had a relationship with one another. So even though there were nine of us, they occasionally just said, we're going out on walks. In fact, one of the weird rules they had was that unless you were working or had some absolute reason like school, you couldn't get up before 7. You know why? Because my parents spent from 6:30 a.m. to 7 a.m. together, and they planned the day, and they planned what we were going to do, right? Because they were in charge, and they worked it together, and that togetherness was important. Recognizing that you come together. And this says, successive marriage is the sum of small efforts focused on showing love and appreciation repeated every day. We talked more about that last week. And then it says this, parenting is the next thing I wanted to touch base on. Before I got married, I had 6 theories about raising children. Now I have 6 children and no theories. Like that. It's kind of true, isn't it? But one of the things I wanted to stress to you about parenting is simply this, be a parent. We have a society today where a lot of people are struggling with this idea. When I was a kid, there was a TV show called The Courtship of Eddie's Father. This shows you how old I am. Any of you guys remember that? Remember the theme song? I love the theme song. It was this smash hit, and I thought it was really great as a kid. So people let me tell you about my best friend. It was the dad singing about his close relationship with his son and how they were best friends. And I remember going to my mom and saying, that is such a wonderful song. I wonder, how do you feel about you or dad being my best friend? And my mom said, it's a terrible idea. My feelings were kind of hurt. But I said, what do you mean? And she said, it's not my job to be your friend. It's my job to be your parent. And that's true, isn't it? I mean, I have friends in life, but I needed a parent, somebody who would help me to grow and become the kind of person I want. And a good parent has goals for where they want their child to go, right? And I realize they have to be tailored to the person, but basically you have general ideas like, I want them to grow up to be responsible, independent, mature adults. And for me, you know, growing up in the faith as having a real connection with Jesus Christ. You know, parenting, then, we're shaping things. And of course, we don't do this just trying to, when I say be a parent, I don't mean just boom, boom, boom rules. Part of what you're doing as a parent is saying, hey, you're sharing that you're human, that you make mistakes, that you're trusting they're going to help you. One of the things I've always told my kids was, and again, you know, I'm mixing up some of the things I'm saying about myself, but you have to create your own and think of your own rules and ways. But I know I'm going to make mistakes. You kind of have to bear with me sometimes. Part of respect is going along with me even when I'm wrong, you know, a little bit. So we're going to do that. Part of is morphing the rules as a parent, right? As your children age, you have to change the way that you're in charge so that they're getting more independent. To what degree can they challenge you and say, this is wrong or this is right? How do you do that in a respectful way? Those are tough things to do, but we learn how to do them along the way. And I want to say, boy, Joy and I really try to be on the same page, like my parents did. They had that great example. But I often think, I tell Joy this almost every time we have a difficult thing going on in our family, I say, wow, my heart goes out to single parents. That must be one of the hardest jobs in the world, to do it by yourself or to do it on your own. And I hope they're finding support networks and people that can help and support them along the way. One of the things my kids always said to me was, they would ask me, who do you love more? Have you ever had kids ask you that? You know, do you love me more or Paul more? And then I know some parents say, well, I love you all equally. I never said that because I'm honest. I always said, I don't love you equally. I love you differently, right? Sometimes I don't like any of you. But I love you and I'm committed to helping you grow and become the kind of person I want you to be. Right? Here's one here. Giving our children everything they want makes them demanding and ungrateful, and they never learn how to be self-controlled. Think about this the next time you give in to your screaming child, which leads me to discipline. Part of being a parent is certainly having discipline in lives, because discipline is meant to train people to become the kind of people you want them to be. And we don't want screaming individuals. We don't want people who can't handle things themselves. So how do we discipline along the way? Again, I think of my father telling me, he said, basically by the time your kids are 15, your job's done. And what he meant was, you have to do much more training and work with kids when they're little. As they age, there's less and less that happens. That doesn't mean that you're not important. It doesn't mean you're not there to give advice or support. But you're probably not shaping them nearly as much when they're older as you are when they're younger. And I found that to be true too. And I've also took one other piece of advice my parents gave me that I thought was great. They said, you discipline each child differently because kids have different needs. And, you know, my parents, I know there's a big controversy about spanking. My parents rarely spanked, but they did, except for one brother. He is a stubborn, hard-headed, I don't even know how to describe him. He's just a bull of a guy, super strong. And he would do things like ram everybody with his head, knock, you know, grown men down. I mean, he was a big, strong kid. And about once a month, he needed to be spanked. Then he was great. You're in charge, I understand it. It's kind of like a dog I had once where, you know, once a month, you just had to show him you were in charge. I'd take him by the neck and just kind of go like that. And then he'd go, okay, you're in charge. Great. Remember our dog that did that? You know, other dogs, you don't have to do anything. Kids are kind of like that. I remember Paul, if we didn't discipline him when he was a kid, he would, and I don't mean spanking, I mean if he did something wrong and we didn't give him a big enough punishment, he'd punish himself. Because by gum, you're not doing your job. And he would literally take his toys and rip them apart and throw them in the trash. And we'd say, Paul, it wasn't that bad. He'd go, yes, it was. And we'd go, okay. What do you do with that? And I remember once spanking him when he was 8. I only spanked him, I think, about 3 times. But I spanked him once because he had stolen something and it was really serious. And I said, I don't know what to do, but we've got to stop this. This can't happen. You're too old to be doing this. And I remember spanking him. And then he turned around and he looked at me and he says, you're not doing it hard enough. I was going, okay. Being Amanda, I think I spanked Amanda once. I went like this. That's all I did, literally. And B twice, the same way. They screamed and carried on for a couple of hours because the thought bothered them, right? Kids are different. And I realize that's maybe a bad example because I'm using spanking and you're going, I'm opposed to that. I don't care. Whatever rules you have to realize that kids are different. So you're trying to change your discipline to fit their needs. And then they morph, right? As they get older, you know, hopefully you're doing less and less discipline. And I know sometimes people get in situations with older kids, and I think that's a real struggle where you need help and advice on how to go forward. You know, I got to add this in. Once I was talking with someone, and they said they were talking about how they had to ground their child. And I started giggling because my mom had always said, we never got grounded. And I said, why don't you ever ground us? And she said, well, grounding children is more of a punishment for the parents than it is for the child. And so I was kind of giggling about that. And then the person said to me, well, what do you do to discipline your children? And I thought, wow, I can't remember the last time I have. Because as they've gotten older, just less and less. And I think that's a little bit luck, maybe a lot luck. But also, what do you want to do with children as they get older? You want to be having conversations with them about what they are trying to do and become and be. So that discipline becomes less and less frequent. Small disciplines repeated with consistency every day lead to great achievements gained slowly over time. Time was the next thing I wanted to get to. Because I hear a lot today about people trying to live quality lives. And there's something to that. You want to make the most of the time you have with your children and loved ones. But above all, children spell love time. T-I-M-E, right? And to some degree, you just have to spend time together to figure out who you really are and how you relate. And there's some tricks to that, and they're not hard ones. You know, eating together. Have you read the studies on eating together and what a difference it makes in people's lives? Huge. You know, almost the number one best thing you can do for your family is to eat together. So don't eat with 5 of you in different rooms, eating different foods, watching different things. Spend some time together. Put away some of the phones sometimes to actually spend time together. You ever been to a restaurant and you look at some families and they're there and they're all texting as they're eating dinner? And you just go, my gosh, is that sad or what? I got to say, it's even sadder when it's a group of like 20-year-olds all there together texting instead of actually communicating, right? We want to be communicating with people in real ways and spending real time together. And then I thought of this, the power of no. Again, my parents had 9 children. They were experts at no. In fact, when I came along, I often thought, gee, my parents are like gurus. They know everything. And they did feel that. It did feel that way. They knew what I was thinking almost before I thought of it. But they would say no to things. And part of the reason they said no was because they had priorities in line. When you have priorities, you say no to certain things and yes to others. So you don't say yes to everything that comes down the pike. And an area where this really ties in has to do with kids' extra activities, extracurricular activities. You know, sports have become this kind of runaway, crazy thing in our society. I remember when Amanda was taking gymnastics and somebody was saying, well, she's doing well, is she going to go this far? Well, she wasn't that great, but that's okay. She was doing okay in it and doing well, but somebody said, are you going to do X, Y, Z and do it? And I go, well, we're not raising a gymnast, we're raising a kid. We want her to become a responsible, mature, well-rounded adult, not a gymnast. And I certainly wouldn't want her to go to activities that are going to take her away from Sunday or spiritual things that I've made priorities, right? Or other things that are priorities. There was one family we knew that, you know, sent their kid off to Texas to go, you know, one parent went with her so she could go to a special gymnastics school. And you're going, huh, that seems like a bad idea all the way around, right? Why would we do that? Why would we split up our family? Or you see what I'm saying? Saying no. Safety is another one. We run into a lot of parents today who are helicopter parenting, doing for children what they can and do for themselves, doing for children what they can almost do for themselves, making parenting decisions based on their own ego. All these things they do to protect their children and keep them safe. And you know, life's risky. Got to have some risks in life, right? We want our children to become mature adults, so they have to take risks along the way. How else will they learn? What are they going to do with failure? How are we going to let them go forward? And it's important for children to have an opportunity to fail. My parents were crazy about this. I think with having 9 children, they just didn't care that much, maybe, about safety. But I remember at 16, we lived in Germany, and my parents, spring break, I said, I just turned 16, and they said, I said, gee, I'd like to go to England and, I don't know, hitchhike around there. My parents said, sure, sounds like a great idea. I look back at that and go, what were they thinking? Right? One of my brothers went to college back east. You know how he got there? He hopped trains. I'm not making that up. He hopped trains to get there. And my parents knew that and were okay with it. Let's not be that crazy. Okay? But on the other hand, why would we helicopter parent? Right? We want to be allowing kids to make decisions and to live on their own. Here's another one. Oh, I like this. Don't rescue your child from a challenge. Teach them how to face it. Language, you know, positive language. We could break this down into different categories. We could talk about, you know, honesty, I think, how we have honest communication with one another. No cussing would be another one. But also just respectful language in the family and to one another, right? Because that's an area where people are often struggling. And you hear families communicating in sometimes terrible ways. So positive language. I thought of... we're getting near the end here. There are 4 very important words in life: love, honesty, truth, and respect. And without these in your life, you have nothing. 4 words that we want to share and talk about positively. But then the last 2 I wanted to mention, you know, which I think every parent talks about to their children to some degree: dating. I like that picture for dating. I thought that was a good one. You wouldn't believe what came up when I hit dating. You don't want to go there with Google search, let me tell you that. Anyhow, dating. When we were talking about this with our kids, we set a rule about, because we wanted them to have safety in childhood. We said, you can't date till you're 15. That doesn't mean you have to date when you're 15. If you want to wait till you're older, amen and hallelujah. There's no rush on this. There's no pressure. But I think it is a good idea to have a guideline on where you want to do it, and then to talk about how dates work and what you expect and the way the relationships go there, which I left entirely to my wife to handle. And drugs and alcohol would be another one. They say that a lot of parents have trouble talking about this, especially if they've had issues in their lives with it. Again, kids will look to what you model much more than they will look to anything else. But it is important to have these conversations. We're fortunate, again, that you know, Joy's a nurse, so she takes care of all these people who are having drug and alcohol problems. So almost every story she tells from work ends with, and don't do meth, which we all know now. But, you know, having conversations and talking with people about the temptations they're going to face, because believe me, drugs are everywhere, and you know, we tend to think of a place like Eagle being a safe haven. It is definitely not. In fact, I would guess that the drug use in the high school is probably a little bit above average for the state. That would be my guess. And it's a serious issue to talk about and to create guidelines for what you expect and want and hope and how your conversations are going to go. We'll talk about all these things, and I just wanted to finish this before we celebrate the confirmation class. They're probably going, man, we'll get to them next. But one last thing about guardrails. And this whole conversation was really just to get us thinking about it, talking about it, maybe envisioning how we're going to help create some guidelines, maybe sparking something new. But when I was a boy, my family lived in Gresham, Oregon, and we lived actually outside of town. And Powell Boulevard, some of you have been in Oregon, you know that's a big road, a highway. But where we lived, it was just a two-lane road, and it was a mile straight shot from Gresham to our house. And as you went, you crested this hill, and then there was a half-mile straight shot downhill that was marked 55 miles an hour. And at the end of this, right by our house, there was a curve. And the curve was marked pretty clearly at 35 miles an hour. But a lot of people didn't see that. And when they take that corner, they would just go flying off. In fact, when I was in junior high, it was the most dangerous corner in Oregon. 34 accidents in 1 year. And a bunch of them fatal. And they would go off there. And, of course, later on, once they realized how dangerous it was, they put up more signs, they banked the road more, and they put up a guardrail to help everybody. But the weirdest thing, and I thought a lot about this, was that when people would go off the road there, there was a farmer's field. It was this big open field, in part because he didn't want to have anything there that people would hit because they kept going off the road there. But there was this open field, and in the midst of that field, there was a power pole, right? And as people come off, there was 8 to 10 acres of open space there, and they would invariably hit the power pole. It was sad because it often meant they died. Yeah, but, you know, at the same time, we were kind of going, what is it with people? They have 8 acres they could aim for, and they keep hitting the power pole. So we'd lose our power that last year. We were losing it at least once a month because people were hitting the power pole and dying. You know, so it was just sad, but also weird. And so they came to repair this, and we actually had a talk with the engineer in charge of the project, and we said, why is it people keep hitting the power pole? And he said, we've just done a study on this, partially based on this field. And he said, this is what happens. When people go off the road and they're flying and bouncing around, they can't see anything because the horizon's just bouncing. The one thing they can see when they're going off the road is that power pole, and they're actually aiming for it unconsciously because it's the only thing they can see. It's the only fixed point. So they're actually, in a sense, hitting it on purpose. I thought about that. You know, in our life, when we get off path, have you ever noticed that people often seem to go to the most dangerous thing possible? In small ways, you do this without even knowing. Like you've ever been on a diet and then you eat one cookie and then you eat the whole pack? Because I've started now, I've broken it so I can eat the whole thing, or you know, you can't stop. It's almost like that happens. Having guardrails, but also a plan. What happens when I go off the guardrail? What happens when I go into this place that I don't know? How am I going to keep it safe there? And how am I going to get back on track? It's another thing to think about.